If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. So a lot of news over the weekend. We'll dig into it. Next segment, we'll talk about Superintendent Rocky Hanna's change in direction again. Tough to keep up with his original decision to allow mask opt-outs for parents and sort of the changes over the three-month period, and now a special Facebook message on Sunday at 1 o'clock, which is becoming clear was now motivated by a death in the community, which now is really such a lack of information revolving around that. But we'll dissect it on some of the things that Superintendent Hanna said. I think one of the things that stuck in my mind was that the number speaks for themselves, which I think could be nothing further from the truth. Now, be clear, if you want to mandate masks, there's a lot of reasons to do that. I mean, a lot of rationale that someone that wants to do that can do it. But to do it and say the numbers speak for themselves is not one I would use. But we'll diagnose Hanna's decision. And also, you know, there are a couple of counties in Florida that have mask mandates, and they have very up-to-date dashboards on the number of cases. So you would think that if mask mandates work, then you would see a difference in the first 2 weeks of school with the school districts that are requiring masks for everyone versus someone like Leon County that had an opt-out. And so we'll look at those numbers, give you an update on that. And again, I want to be clear here, you know, my review, and we'll get into this also in the bottom of the hour on some of the research on masking, is there are some things that work in schools that's been scientifically tested. And that is that impacts the transmission of COVID. And so, you know, I am not arguing here that there's nothing that we can do in schools. My point is that when you start relying on a certain remedy without scientific evidence, and you don't promote the others, are you really doing yourself justice? I mean, there are things that work in schools and have been proven to work, and we'll talk about that. The other issue is, you know, if you look at what this virus is doing, it just really looks like there's nothing we can actually do other than the vaccination in terms of limiting the hospitalizations. The virus appears, is not going to be stopped. It's going to move through like other respiratory viruses, and it's going to be here for a while. But we'll talk about some of the studies, and want to talk about also how the media in the bottom of the hour is using this, use these studies to sort of promote a narrative and really to mislead different groups. And this is on both sides. You know, we've gotten to the point now, I think we have forgotten that this is a virus that started in China. And I think looking now at what's going on, this isn't Joe Biden's fault. It isn't Donald Trump's fault. It's not Ron DeSantis' fault. It's not Superintendent Hanna's fault. But I tell you what, we've forgotten that this is a virus that no one can seem to control, and we've got to sort of deal with it. And what we've done in the process is really just succumb to the emotional reaction of dividing us. Everything's about Republican, Democrat. It's about virtual signaling where you stand on these things instead of really just accepting what it is and trying to get through it. So, and again, the hypocrisy on both sides, and we'll talk about that also in terms of how they are now dealing with issues, it's depressing, doesn't really show a way out. The only thing we can hope for, as we're starting to see in Florida, is that looks like the cases have peaked and it'll start headed down. And, you know, I guess we're going to have to get used to these waves. And obviously what, you know, the message is to get vaccinated. And so, there's issues with that also, But we'll dig into that. Also, want to talk about, we got the latest jobs numbers in Florida and thus the county here, the 67 counties. So we'll run through those. I think good news overall. As I have said before, we are looking at now where we used to look at the previous year's month jobs and their 12-month average and try to ascertain where we're going. We're now looking at the last 2 years, 2019 and 2020, due to the impact of the pandemic on the numbers. Obviously, our jobs in July are way up over what they were a year ago because of the impact of the pandemic. But we want to sort of look at where we are in relation to 2019. So we'll have those numbers for you. Also, in the last segment, Incorporated, which lists the fastest growing private sector companies, I guess the top 5,000, we've got a local area company that has made the list. And so we will tell you who that is and what they do and how they got to make that list. I believe they list 5,000 of the fastest growing companies in the United States over a period of time. You got to be privately held, and you got to have sales over, I think, a 3-year period, and they look at the growth over that 3-year period. So we'll talk about that. Also, I've ridden by the site of the new Amazon Fulfillment Center, and I will tell you that it is they have broken ground there and are moving rather quickly. And if you go online and look at the time this is going to take, I was doing some traveling over the last couple of days, so I've driven on the interstates, and you see these fulfillment centers obviously strategically placed next to the interstate. And down in the Ocala area, between Gainesville and Ocala, there are a number of them there. But these things, it's going to go up rather quickly. I think they'll be starting to hire people in 2022, from what I understand, at the fulfillment center here in Leon County. And so, I was talking to someone today. If you look at what's going on around Tallahassee, seems to be a little bit of momentum. Whether you look at all the dirt that's being turned, be it the huge new temple up on North Thomasville Road with the Mormon Church, you look at the Market District with the new REI, which is they're putting up the walls on that now, and all these cut-in developments where we're putting in new homes. This seems like there's a little bit of momentum here. We'll have to see if that, this, when we talk about the job numbers, September and October are some of the major job growth months for Leon County. So I'm excited to see exactly how that gets registered here coming out of the pandemic. We did talk about consumer demand in terms of taxable sales during our last, I guess it was last week. And, we're about 95% of where we were in 2019. So things are moving in a positive direction. And with school well underway now, the students are here in town. I think there'll obviously be more economic activity beginning. And hopefully, as we weather this COVID wave, it will be heading out of Florida in the next couple of weeks, and we can get back to business as normal. So, again, appreciate you joining us. When we get back, we'll talk about Rocky Hanna's press conference that he held on Facebook on Sunday, the implications, why he made that decision, and we'll dig into some more on that move. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. 1-800-919-3849. And we appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, pivoting to the decision on Sunday by Rocky Hanna that was broadcast on Facebook at 1 o'clock. You knew when you got that message, I guess it was about 3 hours before that, that something was going to happen. Although the complete reason for why the announcement happened that quickly was not really known until a couple days later, and we'll get into that. But his announcement basically was to go and do away with the medical opt-out, or do away with the parental opt-out, go back to the original policy of only a medical opt-out. And, you know, he had drawn the ire of the education commissioner and Governor Ron DeSantis when he first proposed just having a medical opt-out. He claimed he didn't understand the order and thought that the medical opt-out met the threshold for having an option for parents. So, and that's fine. I mean, it is a complicated process. And so they went with having a parental opt-out for the first, I guess, 10 to 15 days of school. And so during his comments, he basically said, look, the numbers speaks for themselves, indicating that we've had a rash of COVID numbers in the first 10, 11 days of school, and therefore, and that, you know, that will be that's the rationale for going back to the mask mandate. Now, the problem I see with that comment is that if you look at the numbers, first of all, the opt-out numbers were pretty low. They were only at about 7%. So you're arguing that the reason why the numbers were, quote, high is because of those people that aren't wearing masks. That's the first issue. The second issue is if you go and look at Alachua County, which is a county that started school August 10th, Leon County started school August 11th, they've got a very comprehensive dashboard, and they mandated masks from the very beginning. They actually have more cases in the first 10 to 11 days than we had here in Leon County with the opt-out option. So the numbers are not the reason I think that this was done. I think it was done for another reason, and that came a little bit, you know, to light when we heard, and this is, you know, in very shaded news stories in the sense of what had happened, that a Canopy Oaks student had passed away. Now, Superintendent Hanna said he couldn't talk about it, but this was something he learned on Saturday and said it impacted his decision. There's nobody is reporting that this is due to COVID, although there are a lot of insinuations, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, how the media are using some of these numbers and using some situations to make insinuations or to make misleading headlines or leading headlines. But so that obviously impacted his decision on Sunday, but he didn't talk about it on Sunday. He said it was about the numbers. Well, if you go look at the numbers, that really doesn't make sense either. And so, you know, listen, everybody's credibility is being questioned here. And this is not just with Superintendent Hanna. I mean, you can look at Governor DeSantis in the terms of some of the things that he's trying to do in regards to vaccine passports. He has really is not a lot of authority to enforce some of these decisions that he's making, and therefore people are ignoring them. And that's exactly what's happening with the school districts. You know, there are a number of school districts down south, like Alachua County, which is further south here, but in South Florida, Broward County, Palm Beach County, Miami-Dade have just really defied the order of Ron DeSantis of the order, which is requiring a parent opt-out, and they're just not listening to him. And he really doesn't have a lot of good options to enforce this order. It really, from my perspective, really looks bad when you start talking about withholding money from schools because of this, because it's not something you can do right away. You know, Superintendent Hanna is talking about this being a temporary thing. So what are you going to do? Withhold money? And then if they lift the mandate in 2 weeks, it's just a very messy situation. And it's beginning to really look like a lot of politics that political decisions that can't be enforced. And this is what's going to fall on Superintendent Hanna. So he is one of the first first elected official that is ignoring an order by the governor of the state of Florida. And so now, if you're a parent, you could just say that doesn't want your kid to wear a mask, you could say, well, I'm going to ignore the superintendent's policy ramifications. He's ignoring the governor of the state of Florida, so why can't I just ignore him? Now the question would be, if kids come to school without a mask, what are they going to do? Are they going to pull them out of the classroom and put them in a room? See, this is where it's going to get really dicey in terms of how this is going to be implemented. And, you know, it's, again, if we go back and look at, you know, all these policies that are being implemented by politicians, they really can't be enforced. And again, when you've got the president of the United States telling school boards that, look, whatever funding you're penalized, we're going to make you whole from a federal level. I mean, it is, again, we have forgotten that this is a virus that started in China and came to the United States and is unfortunately impacting our lives. And now we've got these politicians that think they all have the answers to fix this through government. And I will tell you from Governor DeSantis' side, I've been disappointed in a couple of the decisions because they really go against what the conservative principles, in the sense that, you know, if you look at telling businesses that you can't run your business the way you want, I think that's been a principle from the conservative point of view, is you can't tell us what kind of cake to make. And at the same time, if a business doesn't want to allow people in without masks, they suffer the consequences of that, or they're prepared to deal with how that affects their business. So we've got the governor who is saying, look, you know, you can't require vaccine passports, a private business. I just don't understand how that's consistent with how we're dealing with this. Now, I understand that, you know, that you have rights and you have liberties, but at some point, we've got to be consistent with how we're promoting our message. Now, if you get at Superintendent Hannah's message about the mask being the answer for this, what he's relying on is he's saying, well, look, there are rules, or there are guidance by the CDC, and there are doctors that are saying that this is the right thing to do. But, and I understand you seek out guidance from professionals, but, you know, and we'll talk about this in the next segment. If you're looking for scientific results on masking kids, you know, under the age of 12 and how it impacts COVID, you're going to have a real tough time finding them. And that's not to say that there aren't things that don't work in schools, but we'll go over a study when I get back in the next segment that the CDC conducted. And it basically found that masking kids, and this was in a blind study, which are very rare, impacted tens of thousands of students. They found no impact of students wearing masks. Now, they did find some policies that would mitigate the spread of COVID, and we'll talk about those. But when you go back to these leaders that are just starting to make these policy decisions, and they're based on, you know, they're based on ideological positions, or they're based on, you know, what other groups want, instead of just saying, look, I haven't heard anybody yet say, look, here's a study that I'm going to use as a rationale for making my decision. It's always based on what somebody else is going to say, or it's based on public interest groups and what they want. And again, this is both sides. You know, I've been a critic of Governor DeSantis for taking down all the information, the data on the COVID numbers in Florida, because that provides information that you can use to support your point. And now we don't have that, and we have to go by sort of cherry picking data, which really doesn't help anyone. So all right, when we get back, we're going to look at some of these studies, and we're going to look at how the media uses these studies to get their point or their narrative across. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold. with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's our Tuesday edition. Appreciate you joining us. We're going to dig right into this segment on how the media deals with some of the COVID numbers, the COVID findings and mitigation efforts. There was a story in the New York Magazine, which is not a conservative magazine by any stretch. And what they basically did was looked at a study done by the CDC. Yes, that's the same CDC that is saying that I think kids over two should be masked. What happened is this study came out and the media covered it, but there was a problem. What the media likes to do, and it's tough when you're looking at these medical studies, is they like to look at the summary and they write about the summary. Well, what the New York Magazine did is they went and analyzed this study and found what the actual findings were, and then they looked at how it was covered by the media. And first of all, if you look at the study, it stands out because of the number of students that it covered and also the methodology. There was a control group, which means that you're looking at the impact of something when it is in place and when it's in areas where it's not in place, and you compare the findings. But according to the New York Magazine, the study published by the CDC covered more than 90,000 elementary school students in 169 Georgia schools from November 16th to December 11th. The study, according to the CDC, was the first of its kind to compare COVID-19 incidents in schools with certain mitigation measures in place to other schools without those measures. So that is a methodology that's very difficult to implement or to replicate. The study found that masking then unvaccinated teachers and improving ventilation with more fresh air was associated with a lower incidence of virus in schools. Now, that was what was included in the summary. What was not included in the summary was the finding that many of the most common mitigation measures in schools were not effective. These measures included distancing, hybrid models, classroom barriers, and requiring student masking. So the New York Magazine spoke to scientists who believe that the decision not to include the effects of student masking requirement in the summary amounted to, quote, file drawing, basically hiding these findings. That's a term researcher uses for the practice of burying studies that don't produce statistically significant results. Another scientist or professor at the University of California in San Francisco's Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics said that a masking requirement of students failed to show independent benefit is a finding of consequence and great interest. It should have been included in the summary. And so this study, this again is how media, either from the lack of following up or from their own challenges in looking at these studies, this CDC study was published and is not being cited at all because of the way it was presented in the summary. So now the thing is a lot of times when people say, well, you're an anti-mask person, you're conservative, you just don't want anybody wearing masks because of, quote, freedom or individual rights. Well, that can all be true, but it could also be true that masks don't work. Now, what this does is say that there are situations in school mitigating measures that do work. Masking unvaccinated teachers and also improving ventilation in schools. So the question now becomes, when you look at this and this is what we would consider a scientific finding, and it's getting nuanced away or hidden in a study and the media is not picking up on it. Now, you might ask, well, this was done back before the Delta variant came out. And, the scientist says here, look, I don't think that the Delta changes the calculus because it still seems clear that it doesn't cause more severe disease. So it still doesn't change the fundamental question of what are we trying to achieve by masking kids when they are still extremely unlikely to suffer from severe illness or death if infected. And the adults in their lives have the opportunity to be vaccinated and also protected. So we don't need to worry about transmission. And so, the thing is not only is this study out there, but there are other studies in Europe that do not mask kids that also found the same thing. Now, it's clear, I think, what we see happening here in the United States, and I've talked about this in this show and in previous shows, is, you know, the United States is good at a lot of things, and we're good at politicizing the most basic thing wherever possible, and that's what we're doing here. This virus has been politicized from the very beginning, and now we're starting to see, like I've said earlier, this wasn't Trump's fault, it wasn't Biden's fault, it wasn't Superintendent Hanna's fault, it's not DeSantis's fault. The problem is everybody's trying to take advantage of it, from, you know, Republicans and Democrats, and we're not following any of the science. And the problem is that there's really not a lot of answers to some of these respiratory viruses. I mean, if you go back and look at how many people died from the swine flu, how many kids died from the swine flu or from other flu seasons that have been out of the ordinary, it's just it is a sad part of life. These things happen. Now, no doubt that this virus is ravaged people in certain categories, the old and those who have some other breathing issues, diabetes and obese. But this is just, you know, when there aren't simple answers to things, it's going to get politicized. And we see that. I mean, look, there's been this brouhaha here in Florida between Associated Press and Ron DeSantis. They wrote an article that tried to link, you know, one of his donors to the fact that he is pushing a therapeutic that has been proven to work. And actually, Nikki Fried is now behind it also. But this headline, which was completely misleading, and I think most, actually, there was even some consensus among journalists that the headline was misleading. So what's the purpose of that? Why would AP do that other than, again, politically taking advantage of this? Now here, closer to home, we talked about this death of a child at Canopy Oaks Elementary. You know, the way this is getting reported really makes you think about what the motives here are for the way it's being reported. You know, Superintendent Hanna said that it had an impact on his decision, but he was not able to talk about the specifics. Nobody has been able to ascertain if this was COVID-related. However, an article here in a local news outlet is strongly insinuating that it does, without any kind of proof. And so, again, unfortunately, what is happening here and around and locally and around the state and in the country is this is being politicized to no end. And, you know, we're going to have to get through this. I would hope that maybe a couple of leaders here locally would, you know, rise up and say, look, this is a virus. We didn't cause it. We're wrestling with how to deal with it. But to go back to what Superintendent Hanna said, that the numbers speak for themselves, I think really is misleading, and it doesn't really carry his case. He would be better off to have just said, look, I feel like there's some benefit to mask, and so we're going to mask mandates. But to argue that there's some scientific finding that masks work with kids, 5 to 12 years old, I think it just really undercuts what you're doing. And again, if he is ignoring a law, why can't parents ignore what he wants to do? I mean, you start heading down this road, and it makes it very difficult. I mean, if you look at the two options, let's start with Governor DeSantis that he had when schools started dealing with this. One of the options that Governor DeSantis could have said with regard to these mask rules, he could have said, look, you know, I'm a conservative, I'm a Republican, I favor the local, I favor government that's closest to the people. School boards are as close to the people as you get. Elections have consequences. If your school board is doing something that you don't like, then you need to get to the ballot box and change that. And he said, we don't have tools in place right now that are very effective in implementing any kind of order that I would make requiring, a parental option on masks. And so, you know, you're going to have to get out to your school boards and let your voice be heard. That would be one thing he could have said. Now, on the other side of this, Superintendent Hanna could have said, look, the governor of this state has made an order that ties my hands. It is the law. I am bound by the Constitution in Florida to follow the law. And so that's what we're going to do here. Those are two different options that were not followed by either of those leaders. Don't know what the results would have been, but they probably would have been more consistent. No, they definitely would have been more consistent with, I think, each one's position in terms of their politics, but they weren't followed. And so now we're left, you know, to go ahead and follow a mask mandate from a superintendent who's not following the law and has changed his position three or four times. We're just really in a bad space with respect to this. Hopefully, like I said, the virus will move on out of here in the next couple of weeks so we can get back to normal things. Anyway, when we get back, we'll pivot to jobs and some local business news. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Local and it matters. It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3, our last segment for Tuesday. We'll be back on Thursday at noon. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite quartz and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower with Spartan. They do not mark up the cost of stone materials the way they see it. Since they didn't carve it out of a mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. 765-2037. All right, I appreciate you joining us today. And like I said, this we'll be back on Tuesday at noon to get you caught up on more local news and dig into some of the other issues going on. I wanted to pivot to some more non-COVID stuff, talk about jobs. We've got the latest job numbers are in. And as I've said before, you know, we used to, Taos Reports covers these numbers on a monthly basis. We compare them when we get a report on the July numbers to last year's July numbers. However, with the COVID pandemic, it doesn't tell you a lot because, you know, we added about 13,000 jobs since last July, but that's because, you know, the economy was shut down and we were just coming out of the impacts of the pandemic. So if you go back and look to July of 2019, we are almost right at the number of people being employed. July 19 was 149,100. This month, July 2021, is 148,900. So just under 200 jobs less than 2 years ago. So definitely recovering. There are more people in the workforce than in 2019, about 2,000 more. And that's why the unemployment rate is at 5.0 compared to 3.6% in July of 2019. Now, the unemployment rate has improved since last month, where it was 5.7%. So, if you and we'll have this story up in the next day or two, but Taos Reports, we also publish a graph that shows you can look at the number of people employed over the last 4 years in the specific month. For example, these numbers are for July, and so you can look at we are like I said, just approaching the July 2019 number. But we are well above the July 2018 number of 147.7, and we're at 148.9. So the next 2 months are going to be critical to see if we can get up to the point to where we catch or surpass the 2019 number, because those are the 2 months where there's some job growth, people get back into the job market, and we'll see. And we compare well with the state. If you look at the state numbers, the state level, the unemployment actually increased. The July unemployment rate, decreased from 5.7% to 5.1%. So we are just a little bit below the state number. And so that is, again, progress. And as we've talked about some of the projects that are going on here in Leon County, you see the overall impact of the local economy, or the the impact of people moving to the state of Florida, given some of the things that have happened over the last year and a half, I think this all bodes well for where we're going from an economic standpoint. It will be interesting to see, because, you know, one of the things that we're hearing from the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce, when you get past this back and forth over some of the corruption talk, is that, you know, they're trying to push this narrative of jobs. Look, a job can address a lot of the social ills that we're being faced with. And so, again, with the Amazon project coming online next year, you're going to see an increase in the number of jobs. The question is I think we'll start, the question is to analyze the impact of that. And are these jobs going to really be able, are we going to see something that moves the needle, that like is going to increase, you know, household income? Is it going to increase the number of people that are working relative to, you know, unemployment, people that can't get jobs? And so we'll see what happens with that. But that's, I think good news overall. One of the things I wanted to highlight, we've got a story up on this at Tallahassee Reports, is a local business made the Inc. Magazine 5,000 list, which they track the fastest growing private companies. And a company from Lloyd, which is near Monticello, called Perfect Plants Nursery, made the list, and they came in at 150 on the list. Perfect Plants Nursery had a three-year revenue growth of 2,789%. So obviously one of the fastest growing companies in the country. Now, just a little bit about the way they measure this and the award by Inc. Media. It says the prestigious award was started in 1982. They analyze company data to identify which privately held business in the United States are the fastest growing. The 2020 income Inc. 5000 is ranked according to the percentage of revenue growth when comparing revenue in 2016 and 2019. To qualify, companies must have been founded and generating revenue by March 31st, 2016. They must be U.S.-based, privately held, for-profit, and independent as of December 21st, 2019. The minimum revenue requirements required, you had to have at least $100,000 in revenues in 2016, and the minimum for 2019 would have been $2 million. So, you know, making this list gives the company global recognition, obviously. Perfect Plants Nursery is a family-owned and operated online mail-order plant nursery. Their story began over 40 years ago when the land for the nursery was purchased by the father of the nursery's owner, Alex Cantor. As the nursery grew, so did the Cantor family, and now their families are doing the same. So what began as a few single beds growing shrubs and trees now spans more than 60 acres. So this has been a business that has been growing over the last 10 years. This is not something, and you know, sometimes you see these fastest growing headlines and you think that this is something that happened overnight. But, you know, this clearly, if you read this article, you can see that this, you know, has been in the works since 2013. And so it's good to be able to acknowledge the company. I think they've got about 40 to 50 employees. And if you go to TallahasseeReports.com, you can see the a picture of the nursery, then the 60 acres from over the top of the nursery. And it's pretty impressive. But there, again, this is one of, you know, a nursery that was in business for 30 years, they found out that online shipping and the plants that they ship was a business. And so interesting. I'm sure it'll get more publicity as we move forward. And again, this is the thing, you know, people talk about the Amazon fulfillment center coming here. And they said, well, you know, we've been arguing about people buying local for 20 years, and now we're just going to let the Amazon fulfillment center here. Well, the problem is this, is that people weren't buying local, even though people were trying to get them to buy local, they weren't, which created this growth in Amazon. Now, at least Amazon is coming back, and we're going to get some of the jobs back here that we lost in retail due to the growing impact of online sales. And so, you know, that's one way to look at it. And here you're looking at a business that is now employing people here in our area that, again, has converted what they were doing to take advantage of the move to online, and now we're employing people. So, I mean, look, it's not what it used to be, but we've got to figure out ways to survive in this economy. And we're seeing, you know, we're talking about two ways right now with, a family-owned business and obviously a corporation moving here to create more jobs. So anyway, with that, we'll say goodbye for the day. Appreciate you joining us here. And we'll be back on Thursday. So have a good afternoon. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.